podcast is brought to you by the Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group in London and with the kind permission of the Parkinson's UK charity. Welcome to Parkinson's Life Raft. Parkinson's Life Raft is designed to help you, whether you have Parkinson's or, like me, you care for someone who does. And whether you're having a good day or a bad one, we hope you'll feel connected to others who are in the same boat. Each podcast will invite a person or some people to give us a different perspective on living with Parkinson's. My name's Vivian Goldstein, and I'm a member of the Kensington and Chelsea Parkinson's Support Group here in London. My husband was diagnosed with Parkinson's about 10 years ago. I then discovered this support group, and I've been an active member ever since. Hello, everyone. Anyone who knows me knows that I like talking about emotions. I know that lots of British people shy away from discussing theirs, but in both my personal life and as a professional relationship coach, I have found that talking is best. It really does help any situation within any relationship to talk things through, to become more aware of how each person is feeling, and to work towards satisfying both of you. And today, I hope that you are all going to be open to finding out how you can discuss your feelings, the vulnerability we can feel within our relationships. And I've got just the right person to discuss this with, Dr. Olena Edwards. Dr. Olena Edwards was born in the Ukraine. She's studied, lived, and worked internationally. She has been based in the UK for the past 25 years. Olena works at the Harley Therapy Clinic in Harley Street, London. She's also a writer, researcher, and a clinical supervisor. She works actively with the Harley Therapy Clinic on their wellbeing channel, where she regularly delivers talks and records video blogs based on her therapeutic work within her clinical practice. She specializes in couples therapy, although she also works with individuals. Olena has a lot of experience of working with couples where one of them has a life-changing condition, of which Parkinson's is one. And that is why I have invited her to be with us here today. Hello, welcome, Olena. How are you today?
Hello, Vivian. Lovely to see you. I'm well, thank you. And I'm grateful for being invited to share some thoughts and potentially insights, and hopefully there will be good and useful insights with your audience.
Well, thank you. I wanted to explain, as we all know anyway, Parkinson's affects each of us in a different way. And equally, we're all individuals, so how each of us reacts to this podcast will also be on an individual basis. I asked you specifically because I want to help the listener to open up a conversation with your partner about the emotional side of your relationship. But this is a big bus. Only if you, the listener, wants to. I am absolutely not forcing you to have any conversation you don't want. I want to focus on the emotions that potentially take away the intimacy and close physical relationship because of this horrible disease. I know, having worked as a relationship coach for several years, that if emotions are spoken about clearly and without fear of shame, then much can be achieved to help couples go forward in accepting that this is the new normal. I'm well aware of how my relationship with my husband, Howard, has changed over the years since he was diagnosed. I'm interested, Olena, in exploring how couples, such as myself and Howard, can come to terms with the limitations that do eventually occur in a physical relationship. Because there's a vulnerability in the first place, and then there's the issue of intimacy, as in how comfortable each of the couple is with accepting and not being embarrassed with these limitations. So, Dr. Olena, I'm looking for tips on how to start this conversation. And I'm feeling that anxiety is the word that would be useful to use and acknowledge. What are your thoughts, please?
I can't agree more. I think you've literally hit the nail on the head here. And clearly you've put a lot of thought, and partially a lot of your thinking derives from your personal experience of living with a partner who has Parkinson's. So I think it's really important that we talk more and consider more conversation around intimacy, around vulnerability in working with couples where one of them has been diagnosed with a life-changing condition like Parkinson's. I think it's important to go to the very start, and if we are looking at how to start this conversation, it's important to go to the very start and remember talking about anxiety, which is a pre-verbal emotion stored in the reptile part of our brain. So to remember that churning feeling in your stomach when you and your partner would have received the diagnosis, would have received the dreaded news, and the rush, the rumination, the intrusive thoughts and imaginable and unimaginable scenarios that, you know, you've been playing in your head, and the pressure of practical solutions to be attended to. So we actually choose to proactively engage with all that as deeply as we can to avoid engaging with the main horror of this unwelcome situation, which is realization and awareness and acceptance of the fact that my partner has Parkinson's and we will have to learn to live with it.
I'm a doer. So I definitely, I want to ignore what's physically going on or emotionally going on so that I can just do things to fix it, which I know I do that in all parts of my life, and I know it isn't helpful. It's this acceptance, isn't it, that's I think is so difficult, and I'm sure
other people find it. I mean, I wouldn't say it's not helpful. It is helpful. It is helpful because that's how you protect your vulnerability, because we can only deal as much as we can, as it's psychologically and humanly possible. Being diagnosed with Parkinson's, it's worth thinking either separately or together with your partner. So what does it actually mean? What does it mean to you, Vivian, if I would ask you to engage with your vulnerability? They have Parkinson's. Our relationship has Parkinson's, as it is going to be impacted by it on various, various levels, emotional, sexual, physical, all of it. And I have Parkinson's as well, as a recipient of a vicarious trauma of living with my partner who has it.
It's almost like Princess Diana said, there are three people in our relationship.
Yes. Yes.
I have thought of it that way before.
Yeah. And it is there now officially, because we have the news and it's not going away. While the sad truth is, it will only get worse.
Yeah.
So how can we live with that? How can I live with that? And how can I live with my partner?
So my question to you is, how best, well, and it doesn't have to be the carer that starts this conversation. It can be anyone. How best to start a conversation when one of you realizes that life has suddenly changed, there are limitations, but the other one doesn't seem to be taking that into account in the way they are communicating. So how best to start a conversation?
Obviously, I can only give a very, very general guidance.
That's all I want.
Every couple is different and their relationship is different, and there are facets and uniqueness to every person as well as their relational dynamic. I mean, talking about it within the sort of most general frame of reference, purely from a human perspective, to start with, and therapeutic, obviously, to start with, it's really important to show them that you validate their feelings around the issue, and to evoke empathy to your partner and yourself. Maybe it would be worth considering to try and explore with your partner to start with the following themes. What was it like for you when you started getting worries about your symptoms? Just to help them to open up a little bit. And for example, what did you feel when they told us that it is the dreaded word, Parkinson's? Because when we try to ask them to open up, what did you feel then? We are kind of establishing an emotional bridge between the rational and emotional. We are connecting our feelings and their feelings, and ask them to try and tell us without any pressure. And you need to be mindful that this is such a sensitive subject for them, and everyone relates and reacts individually when faced with any form of existential threat. And Parkinson's is an existential threat. And we can only do as much inviting them to open up and try to talk to us about their vulnerability, the trauma of being diagnosed with Parkinson's and experience of living with it and the fear of losing yourself to it.
What would be a good question to start the conversation?
I think it's important to be mindful that it should be a very gentle startup to this conversation. And if you are looking for examples, I would say, well, again, a gentle startup and open-ended questions are the key to try and have this conversation. And it's important to remember that this is an ongoing conversation, little bits, like little and often, yes, rather than a one big heart-to-heart. As we are dealing with these three P's, as I call them, Parkinson's as a perpetual problem in your relationship. Mm-hmm. And Dr. John Gottman, a famous American psychiatrist and expert in couples therapy, advises that 67% of problems encountered by the couples in general during the course of their life together would be perpetual, and we never will need to learn how to live with them and manage them to the best of our ability. So if we look at the examples of how to start this conversation, how a gentle startup would sound like, we would say something like that. That's just an example, because obviously have our own kind of register of vocabulary and words that we use. For example, I'm curious, I'm wondering if you might want to talk about, would you like to, do you mind if we try to talk about, how would you feel if I asked you about, would it be okay if, I notice you are frustrated every time you do something or whatever you've noticed. Could you tell me what is it that upsets you most?
That's so good, because it's showing interest in them. And whenever you show interest in someone, they have to react positively.
I would be careful with the word have to. Yes, okay. You've got me. Okay. Here. Yes, okay. I would be careful with the word have to.
But you are encouraging them to engage in this conversation. And I know sometimes they just don't want to, and it's the wrong time. Therefore, you have to pick a good time. I mean, if I pick a time when Howard's watching football, I'm not going to get him to engage.
Well, precisely.
So you have to check in for a good moment. But yeah, so with these open questions, you're encouraging them to engage. And I was going to say to you, what words should be avoided and have to would be one of those words. Yes. Yeah.
Well, again, it depends on the couple and what is accepted in their individual interactions.
So can you give me some sentence starters that would be in response to them engaging? So I've asked an open question, they've said something or other, and then I can encourage them to say more
I mean, it would be great if at some point they feel comfortable enough and more sort of relaxed and less ashamed to open up and engage in this conversation. And if indeed they start opening up, try to show that you are engaged and most importantly empathetic. Empathetic while listening, which would encourage them to speak further, as they would feel it's a safe space and they're not being judged. So in a way, the general sort of line of inquiry should be it's a compassionate inquiry. We are exploring it together. I'm here for you if you are willing to share. And I'm here, whatever you would like to share. And sort of to encourage them to continue the conversation, it's important to show your appreciation and your trust in them and them trusting you. So you might say something, I really appreciate you sharing this with me. It means a lot. It must have been really hard and for you to open up. And I'm so pleased that you have started opening up. You have started talking to me about it. I find it really helpful. And it helps me a lot to understand what you are going through and how we can work through this together. And you asked earlier, what is it that we shouldn't say? Which words we shouldn't use? And I think as a general sort of guidance here, it's important to remember that in the life of a couple, it's very healthy to complain. And we should do that because that's how we negotiate and renegotiate our space, our expectations with regards to our boundaries and our partner. And it's important to complain, but not to be critical. And especially with your partner who has a life-changing condition, because they already feel that, you know, that they've lost a lot.
Yes.
They're losing a lot on a daily basis. So it needs to be acknowledged even more on the part of the carer of the partner who has Parkinson's, how challenging it is to witness and manage the disease, destroying the relationship and the brunt of it that both of them are carrying. So it is important to be aware of the emotional burnout, which makes it very difficult to remain strong for the carer, to remain calm, to remain empathetic, not to use criticisms, to remain measured and tolerant. And when our resilience battery is low due to physical or emotional fatigue, we become more easily frustrated and irritated, which is naturally reflected in our manner of speaking. Going back to Dr. Gottman, who I value a lot, he advises that it's healthy to complain and discuss the issue and be mindful that we avoid criticisms, which are like little darts of poison. because criticism is particularly harsh on the one who has this condition. For example, if your partner forgets to take their medicine regularly, despite your best meticulous efforts to remind them of it, take a deep breath and say your complaint, describing what exactly is the problem and articulating your request. It might sound like that. Peter, I see that you have missed your 12 p.m. meds. Can you take them now, please? And let's see what else we can do to make sure that you don't miss them again. Mm-hmm. So this would be a complaint with an expressed wish. Yes, which would be constructive. It will be a constructive complaint. We're not just complaining. We are saying how we can resolve it, as opposed to you always miss your meds, Pete, every time I go out. It makes it impossible for me to go out then. How many times do I need to remind you to take them?
Yeah.
That's a criticism.
Yes, and it's very difficult. And I know that I am beginning to recognize when I'm about to sound critical, mm-hmm. and I'm really getting, I know, even though Howard Meck disagrees with me, I'm getting much better at that, much better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it is interesting how you don't think it's sounding a criticism, but if you put it the way you originally put it, oh, I see you've missed your meds. What can we do to help you not miss them again?
Precisely.
It's a gentler tone, much better feedback. Yes.
Yeah. And just the general kind of rule to remember about healthy complaining, we describe and we do not explain. So just say it plainly what it is and what would you like. When we start using all these words, you always, you never, every time I leave. So these are darts of poisons. This then turns the whole complaint, which is, you know, we complain about a situation. When we criticize, we criticize the person and they feel under attack. Mm-hmm. And the natural psychological reaction of a person who feels under attack, they would want to withdraw. Or equally, they would feel defensive and they would want to fight. We don't want them.
No, and we're not.
Sorry.
We're not actually even solving the problem.
No.
It is purely a critique, which is not helpful.
It's important to remember and to be mindful, and mindfulness and empathy are two huge things to be considered. I mean, to be considered in any human relationship, but especially if you are in a relationship with a partner who has this life-changing condition, they already feel hugely insecure and upset because of the executive dysfunction on many levels they have to deal with daily. And they will naturally feel under attack and will naturally either get defensive or withdraw as opposed to cooperate. Because the bottom line is you need to work as a team. Then both of you feel positive. Then both of you feel that actually I'm not alone with this. Yes, we are in it together. We work through it together. Because a huge part of being diagnosed with a life-changing condition is loneliness. Yes. Yeah. However hard you try to help your partner, psychologically, there's a part of it, and it's important to recognize it, that psychologically, there's a part of them which is really, really important, impossible, which could be impossible for us to access, because it's that's where they feel most alone.
Yeah. And I think carers feel that too. And
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. What is most important is to remember that your relationship is much bigger than the Parkinson's diagnosis. And It's important to try to appeal to the remaining pockets of pleasure, which are still there. The touch, the memory shared together. It could be anything. The meal that you can cook together, if it was your thing, or the meal that you enjoyed when you go out. So anything that really helps you to connect and reconnect. There could be things that you have enjoyed earlier in life, and because of your life has become so busy, you forgot about them. Looking at the photos of your family or your children, or you, both of you, when you were young and doing all those crazy things. So that's really, really important. I call them the quilting points. Yes, it's like a duvet, which has this little sort of buttons, and everything gets
connected
precisely.
I find this interesting because you've said to me that there are these four things: emotionally, physically, intellectually, and erotically. And I find those words very interesting. I've heard from people with Parkinson's that sometimes they need help with very intimate things. For example, there may be a loss of bladder control, or they're having a bad day and they can't dress themselves. These are just a couple of examples of how a person could feel not only physically vulnerable, but also they lose the feeling of, or the sense of, being a sexual person. Sometimes Parkinson's will affect your physical flexibility. And I've heard from a partner who doesn't have Parkinson's that they're slightly concerned to get sexually involved because they might hurt the person. And I don't know, I feel that for some couples, as we get older, the sex often goes out the window. Mm-hmm. And that's possibly neither partner minds, and that's fine. But unless you're a bit autistic, most people like the occasional kiss and a cuddle, even if it doesn't go the whole way, as it was always described when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. Surely it's a good idea to discuss these physical limitations. And do you have any suggestions about how to get back some form of intimacy in a relationship?
Yes, I mean, you've described quite sort of succinctly what couples with Parkinson's, the challenges that they face daily, which in itself is a huge struggle.
I know that you have to talk about stuff. I know that. This, you were talking about loneliness, and I suppose there's a sense of isolation. And once you start to struggle with getting dressed and stuff, then I'm just feeling that people, this is where they start feeling very self-conscious, very embarrassed, and it could lead to shame, which of course it absolutely shouldn't. So what is it that we can do as a couple? There's very gentle start, both in how do we start that conversation and how, what's a gentle start for the physical? And as I said, you don't have to have full intercourse, but it's just getting back to touching and feeling that you don't feel this is going to end up badly, because actually it's just a physical connection.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, as human beings, we are physical beings. The degree of how much we would like to engage physically obviously varies. And again, this is something to do with boundaries. This is something to do with personal, physical and psychological preference. So a big thing here is, as we discussed before, being open to communication, to articulating your needs and fears and vulnerabilities 100%. if we look at the physical aspect of it, what I would like to touch base with today, if this could be helpful, just to consider as a concept, and those who are interested could definitely read a bit more about it. There's a concept which was developed in the 60s by two psychosexual therapists, which is called the sensate focus. And sensate focus is a technique used, it's very much about what you've just described, actually. So it's a technique which is used to improve intimacy and communication between partners around sex and reduce or any sort of physical intimate activity to reduce sexual performance anxiety, because, well, actually, when we connect physically, it doesn't mean that we need to go all the way through, as a lot of people think. And then this creates a huge expectation and anxiety around performance, because what if I can't? What if something happens? What if they feel, awkward or whatnot? So this technique helps us to shift away from ingrained, goal-oriented sexual patterns that may not be serving a couple, especially after a certain life-changing condition or event. And sensate focus is essentially about two things, about touching and being touched. Again, if at this stage of your relationship you are able to tolerate that, well, it's important to be aware and accept that in the early stages of diagnosis, your partner could be so withdrawn and overwhelmed by their trauma, yeah, that they wouldn't want any physical contact at all, even if it's a gentle touch, you touch them on their shoulder or their elbow or whatnot. And this has to be respected. So these are the boundaries. But equally, it's important to be patient and wise and to show them that, you are there. You want to give it to them. Mm. And you are waiting for them to sort of reconnect on this level. So two distinct activities about touching and being touched, and you maximize the potential of sensate focus by beginning without any preconceived notions of what this experience will be like, how it should feel, how much pleasure it should produce. In other words, just begin with an open mind and try to avoid being judgmental and equally evaluative.
Mm. And to get to this point, mm-hmm, you actually have to be willing in the first place to talk about your vulnerability emotionally about having Parkinson's in your life. And this goes for the carer and the person with the Parkinson's.
It's a two-way thing. It's absolutely a two-way thing. There is a lot of fear. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of anxiety. And as long as both of you recognize that and are able to attend to this particular insecurity within each of you, this creates a huge shared pool of empathy, which then allows you to be more open, more attentive to each other's needs, and more generous. I mean, in relationship, a huge thing is generosity in itself. Yes, I can give you a cuddle. I can kiss you at the back of your neck. You may feel like you don't want it, but I will try. And if you don't like it, just tell me. And yeah, I will try again. And I do understand, that today or at this very moment, it wasn't the right thing. but it's okay. But equally, the one with Parkinson's should be generous as well. And rather than, you know, just having this look, don't want it, you know, find the generosity and tell your partner, darling, I'm really sorry. I don't feel like being touched today. Yes. And that's fine, as long as you communicate it with kindness.
Yes, yes. And everything is evolving the whole time. And every day you feel differently, constantly.
Precisely.
People with Parkinson's are saying, oh, I was a bit off. Something happened yesterday. It was at 4 o'clock and it was my off time. And I know from having watched other people that I can see it's very difficult. But that doesn't mean to say that there aren't on times where you can communicate and are willing to engage more easily.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And a major aim of this exercise, Sensate Focus, and there's a certain protocol which you may follow if you are interested in it, or you can just embrace the concept that, you know, it's being physical and enjoying the touch without any preconceived ideas of what might happen next. And so it's really important to let go of the expectations and judgments of mutual touching, and instead focus solely on the sensory aspects of touch, which might gradually recreate this kind of feeling of intimacy and relaxing. The whole idea, in my view, is it's relaxing into the touch. Yes. It's relaxing into the whole idea. I'm lovable. I'm touchable. My partner enjoys that with me, and actually I still enjoy it with them. And just because I have Parkinson's, it doesn't mean that it deprives me of this pleasure.
I agree. So just to start with, gentle kissing, stroking, stop, take your time, try again another day.
I mean, if you want to carry on further,
and it's mutual,
absolutely, have as you know, as much fun and frolics as you can.
Yes,
it's absolutely lovely. Yes, but equally, it's about kind of without being judgmental and evaluative, because when we become too evaluative, it deprives us of the spontaneity of the moment. Yes, we turn into an observer. We evaluative thinking occurs as something is happening, not when it's over, and it's quite self-defeating, as it puts us in the position of observer rather than a participant. And observing brains are blocked from experiencing. So we cannot be in here and now. We cannot actually share the, you know, the experience.
Yes.
Because the observing brains think too much and feel too little. Yes, this comes from anxiety. So we choose to observe because we are scared just to be.
So if we could just hang into that moment of feeling anxious and just see where it takes us, because mostly you don't die. You don't. It's no injury.
No.
Nothing horrific's going to happen. It's all talkable and solvable, and please remain calm.
Not all of it, but a lot of it. Yes, there is a part of it which is not. And, you know, the whole acceptance around life-changing condition is about that as well. But as we were talking earlier, you know, your relationship is much bigger than Parkinson.
Yes.
Your partner should not be defined by their diagnosis. And this is a very important frame of reference, both for you and your partner. There are still lots of pockets of pleasure in life and relationship that you can really thoroughly enjoy, and pockets of pleasure and another thing that come to my mind is, you know, going via sensate focus, just as a frame of reference, you know, you start viewing your partner and your partner as a physical being, their body and your own body as a landscape of pleasure. I think in general, it's a very good reference point. Yes. Going back to what you said earlier, when we age, you know, some of us lose interest because we become preoccupied with, you know, my body age, I don't look as attractive. But, you know, looking at your body as a landscape of pleasure and equally your partner, the landscape has changed. Landscape changes, landscapes change with seasons. They change with time.
Yes.
But they're still there.
Yeah. It's still you inside. It's still
Precisely. Precisely.
Yeah. Olena, you've been so helpful. I hope everyone feels the same. I want to just summarize some things here. So first of all, we must acknowledge our anxiety, and then we can empathize with our partner and check in with them as to how they're feeling in a non-judgmental way using open-ended questions. And don't push it. If neither of you want to talk about it, find a time when you do want to talk about it. Patience is important, as the other one may be feeling that they're losing themselves, and you as the partner may be feeling exactly the same. So it's important not to sound critical. It's a much better conversation if you go about it in a slow, kindly and gentle way. And regarding the intimate sexual part of your relationship, if you've stopped feeling it, if you've stopped being intimate and you miss that part of it, then try the sensate focus. Find a gentle and safe way.
But as one of the means.
Yes.
It's obviously not a universal fix, but it's an idea. It's a frame of reference.
Yes. Yeah. And overall, in everything with your relationship, get rid of your fear. Talk about everything at the right moment. And that way, you won't end up regretting or missing out on anything. Is that a fair summarize?
Yes, with a little teensy-weensy correction on my part. Obviously, coming from you as a life coach who is a very solution-oriented and as a partner of somebody who was diagnosed with Parkinson's, it's a safe place when we have something to hold on to. What I'm saying, and I could sound a little bit wishy-washy as a therapist, I would maybe replace must have to with try. Yes.
Okay. We try. Yeah, that's the opposite.
We try. Yes. So we try our best. We are open to the possibility that, you know, sometimes we succeed, sometimes maybe not as much, but we are trying.
Yes, always.
I
do agree that if we perceive ourselves to fail, it doesn't matter. We've tried and we can try again and we can try in a different way.
Yeah. Because also psychologically, when we have this frame of reference, I'm trying my best. Yes. We remove a layer of pressure of external expectations. You must do it. You have to. I'm trying my best.
Yes.
Yes. I'm kind to myself. I am self-compassionate. I'm trying my best under the circumstances. And actually, you know, something came to me just now as we were speaking. It's a huge undertaking. It's a huge commitment. It requires so much courage, and quite often we just do not acknowledge that enough, you know, to live with life-changing condition and to be a partner of somebody who has this condition. So this in itself, we talked about empathy, we talked about awareness and acceptance and patience. Another huge thing here, absolutely paramount for both, is resilience. Yes? Fostering resilience to live with that so that you can still enjoy life, so that you can still be there for each other and for yourself. So talking about resilience, there was a very interesting study conducted by the Institute of Neuroscience. So how do we grow resilience? And the answer is actually quite simple. We try really hard what we do. We try really hard. We may fail. So we take a break. And then what we do after?
Try again.
We try again.
Try again. Yeah.
That's it. That's it. So let's all keep on trying.
It's like that lovely thing you're told as a child. Pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again.
Yes. Or
it's a song.
Yes. Yes, it's a part of a Buddhist philosophy, isn't it? Every morning we are reborn again.
Yes, yeah. Patience and forgiving, acceptance, resilience. Dr. Elena Edwards, thank you very, very much.
My pleasure.
And I've experienced Elena's therapeutic work personally, and I think she's wonderful, so I highly recommend her.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I look forward to chatting to you again another time.
Thank you very much. And I wish all the best to your audience and yourself and Howard.
Thank you. My thanks again to Dr. Elena Edwards. I have used her services myself and I highly recommend her expertise. So if you want a private therapy session, you can find her at drdr.edwardsharley@gmail.com. To you, the listeners, I very much want to hear from you as to how helpful or otherwise this has been. If you would like some more of this from Dr. Elena, she has very kindly agreed to come back. Please do send in questions. They can be anonymous. I want to impress upon you how confidential this will be. And it's good to talk.
Please note that unless otherwise stated, the people speaking in this podcast are not experts. They are describing their personal experience of Parkinson's disease and ways they have personally found helpful in dealing with it. You must consult your own medical advisors before acting on any suggestions made in this podcast. This applies to experts as well as non-experts. Nothing in this podcast is to be treated as advice, and no liability whatsoever is accepted by the makers or participants for any steps taken in reliance on any part of its contents.